Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, August 27th. I'm Elisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Department of Public Works says there's no reason for anyone to die on a county road. RCSD cleans up 30-year place of use error and seeks permanent water rights. And controversial deal between California lawmakers and tech giants aims to support local journalism. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. A solo vehicle rollover near Miranda early this morning resulted in major injuries. The crash happened around 4:56 a.m. on Maple Hills Road, not far from the Miranda Bridge. According to CHP, a vehicle was spotted with its headlights on for about 30 minutes before the accident was reported. Responders arrived by 5:04 a.m. A female occupant was injured and taken to St. Joseph's Hospital in Eureka. A cat found inside the vehicle was safely transported to the Humboldt County Animal Shelter. Roads in Humboldt County are being evaluated and upgraded for safety under an ongoing planning effort. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County is on a mission to make its roads safer and is continuing to pursue a goal of reducing crashes. An update on the county's local road safety plan was presented to the Board of Supervisors at its August 20th meeting. Public Works Director Tom Mattson described the plan and its adoption of a new approach to road safety.
Our first local road safety plan, we were one of five pilot counties in California in 2017 to be provided help from Federal Highways Association. It was a new way of looking at our crash data instead of looking at the causes like drunk driving, speeding, we looked at the crash types. And that's a completely new way of looking at things. There were very few states at that time looking at it. Minnesota and Washington were leading the way. What it does is it takes us away from blaming people and gets us in a mode for a safe systems approach, because we know people make mistakes, and rather than hold them and let them die, we need to be taking actions regardless of what they are doing. There is no reason for anybody to die on a county road.
The county has found that 74% of its crashes are due to vehicles moving out of traffic lanes. Since 2017, the county has enhanced road signing and striping, adding road edge lines, and changing to brighter, longer-lasting striping materials. County roads where that was done have fewer crashes, especially at night, said Mattson. Sections of Southern Humboldt's Bryceland Thorn Road and Alder Point Road are identified in the plan as priorities for those types of improvements. Another element of the plan relevant to Soham is improving emergency response time. Mattson said clear display of addresses and mile markers help.
That is a complicated ongoing, but a big part of that is signing and striping, clear signing and striping. You know, we worked with some of the rural fire departments and facilitated getting roads and addresses signed everywhere. That's really not a county road sign, but having just your simple address out in the middle of nowhere is hugely important for the local volunteer firefighters to know where you are or where the crash is at. We have some confusion in our post miles on our roads, especially Matole Road, because it's Honeydew's the center of the universe, so it goes one direction one way and one direction the other way from 1 to 42 or whatever. And it could be confusion when you're in the midst of an emergency response call. Well, which portion of the Matole Road are you on? Are you on the Wildcat or are you on the Bull Creek side? And so having addresses, the local people know the addresses and the local firefighters know those addresses.
The plan includes projects and goals for Southern Humboldt Roads. Among its recommended list of projects is the Garberville Complete Streets project on Redwood Drive, which includes bike lanes and median refuges. The project is awaiting funding. A project for sections of Redway Drive and Redwood Drive includes enhanced pedestrian crossings and is expected to be done later this year. The plan's goal of reducing driving dangers, even on narrow rural roads, was discussed in this exchange between Mattson and Supervisor Mike Wilson.
Most of our rural roads are, you know, they're two lanes with maybe enough room for edge lines and a center line. And you really have to pay more attention. But again, we want to get out of looking at blaming the driver. Yes, there is a lot of blame and there's ownership. But again, there's you know, having somebody die for making a simple error while they're driving is not a good thing to live with.
Yeah, and I mean, the technology, it's not just drivers, it's the technology that's changed both roads and vehicles. And so, you know, much of our road system and what's going through our small communities was wagon trails in the beginning, and so they weren't designed for our roads now.
Other areas of the county covered in the plan include McKinleyville, a major component as it's a high population area with many of the county's intersections and intersection collisions. McKinleyville intersections recommended for improvement include Hiller Road and McKinleyville Avenue and Central Avenue and Anna Sparks Way. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Righting decades-old issues has put the Redway Community Services District, RCSD, in the hot seat and the future of a spring-fed waterfall in question. RCSD is addressing water rights issues and district boundary inconsistencies after it was brought to the current administration's attention that the district has been providing water to the Meadows Business Park outside its official place of use for over 30 years. This revelation has triggered a broader effort to clean up old records, align district boundaries, and finalize water rights permits into licenses. Ed Voice, a former Southern Humboldt resident known for his tenacious advocacy for the South Fork Ill River, discovered the place of use discrepancy with the Meadows Business Park. In November of last year, Voice alerted RCSD General Manager Cody Cox about the issue and suggested that the district file a petition to adjust the district's POU to include the business park. RCSD did not act on this suggestion. On March 7th, Voice notified Cox and the RCSD board that he would be filing a complaint with the California Environmental Protection Agency. In his March 13th general manager's report, Cox informed the board that he had hired Jenny Short from 4J's Consulting to address Voice's complaint, quote, regarding our water rights, place of use boundary, and whether RCSD is serving customers outside of our place of use. In addition, we are asking to get electronic copies of all annexation documents associated with adding the Evergreen Business Park on Evergreen Drive to RCSD's jurisdictional boundary. This was likely decades ago, but we are hoping that there is access to those files, end quote, Cox wrote, indicating he believed the Meadows Business Park had been annexed into the district. At an April 24th board meeting, Short stated that records indicated the Meadows Business Park was originally intended to provide water to the business park from an on-site source, with RCSD only providing sewer services. Though all the necessary permits and environmental studies were done for the development project, at some point a change was made to source the business park's water from RCSD instead of the on-site source. However, RCSD never filed the necessary request to annex the Meadows Business Park into their place of use boundary, a step that went overlooked for three decades. To remedy the issue, Short recommended filing for a minor change to the district's place of use boundary to officially include the Meadows Business Park, estimating the cost to be around $4,000. As part of this process, RCSD also discovered inconsistencies between boundary maps maintained by different agencies. The district is working with Short to reconcile these differences as part of the place of use adjustment. Additionally, two water rights permits that were never finalized into licenses are now under review. One for a river diversion of 441 acre feet per year, and the other for an unnamed spring, which has not been used for water supply in about 15 years. The unnamed spring, which feeds a scenic waterfall into the South Fork Ill River, has become a focal point for community concern. The spring is recognized as a critical cold water source for the river, particularly during low flow periods, benefiting local salmon populations. On August 20th, EdVoice also raised concerns on Redhead Black Belt in a letter to the editor about the environmental impact of licensing the spring's water rights, writing, quote, "I am very concerned that RCSD's proposed action will diminish the waterfall and significantly decrease the spring's cold water influence into the South Fork Ill River," end quote. In response, RCSD Board Chair Art McClure responded with his own letter to the editor, emphasizing the district has no intention of resuming water diversion from the spring. He stressed that the current application is an administrative move to finalize a process that should have been completed years ago. Quote, "We do not plan on ever using the spring," McClure stated. "In fact, we are protecting it and the waterfall, which is a cold water source for the South Fork of the Ill River," end quote. Short echoed McClure's statements, explaining that the district is preserving its water rights. Quote, "Water rights are always an asset for the agency and for their customers," Short noted. "It is the board's responsibility to protect the customer's right to potable water while caring for the river and making sure that it remains sustainable for both the people and the aquatic species that need it," end quote. Though all those involved seemingly agree that the spring should be protected, Voice believes if the district has no intention of diverting from the spring, they should let their permit to divert go. Since ceasing to divert water from the spring in 2008, RCSD has relied on the Ill River diversion to meet its water needs. However, the district inadvertently exceeded its permitted river water diversion allocation in past years due to misunderstandings about the permit's terms, according to Short. RCSD is now seeking to extend the development period for its river permit, aiming to secure an allocation closer to the 83 million gallons recorded in 2011, rather than the 73.2 million gallons permitted during the initial development period. Quote, "Bottom line, the RCSD board is merely preserving the water right for a diversion that began in the 1930s for the town of Redway, in case it is needed in the future," Short concluded. "I believe that once you let it go, it would be nearly impossible to get it back. This extension is intended to ensure that the district can meet future water demands without drawing from the spring," end quote. While the unnamed spring's water right remains a valuable asset, RCSD lacks the infrastructure to treat and store water from the spring, making it impractical to use under current conditions. Any future diversion would require approvals from regulatory agencies, which would impose stringent conditions. The place of use adjustment, boundary realignment, and finalization of water rights permits are critical steps in this process in ensuring compliance and sustainability for RCSD's future. However, the district faces potential challenges, including the possibility that the Department of Water Resources might be delayed during the public comment period for the place of use change and the water diversion permit extension, which could lead to a lengthy and costly review process, ultimately impacting the RCSD ratepayers as the district brings their documents into alignment with their actions. RCSD's decisions in the coming months will have significant implications for its water supply strategy and relationship with its ratepayers. We will continue to update as this story develops. Authorities have arrested 38-year-old Richard James Steele following a search warrant executed by the Humboldt County Drug Task Force yesterday, August 26th. Steele was detained at his residence on McKinleyville Avenue without incident. According to the Drug Task Force, during the search of Steele's home, agents found approximately 3 grams of methamphetamine and drug paraphernalia. Steele then informed officers that he had additional firearms stored in a unit on Central Avenue in McKinleyville. After obtaining Steele's consent, agents searched the storage unit and discovered multiple weapons, including an unregistered AR-15 short-barreled rifle, an AK-47 assault rifle, a Chris Vector 45 caliber firearm, and a non-serialized 40 caliber handgun. They also found level 4 body armor and ammunition. Steele, who is a convicted felon prohibited from possessing firearms and ammunition, was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility. He faces multiple charges, including possession of a firearm by a felon, possession of an assault weapon, and possession of a controlled substance. The Humboldt County Drug Task Force is urging anyone with information related to this case or other narcotics-related crimes to contact them at 707 267-9976. Turning to Mendocino, a newly struck deal between California lawmakers and tech giants intended to bolster local journalism is drawing criticism from journalists and advocates who fear it may ultimately do more harm than good. Spearheaded by Assemblymember Buffy Wicks of Oakland, the agreement promises to channel an average of $25 million annually from Google and the state of California over the next 5 years to support struggling newsrooms. However, concerns are mounting that the funding falls short and could further threaten the independence of local journalism. KZYX's Elise Cox brings you the details.
It's common knowledge that the rise of digital advertising companies like Google has ravaged local journalism. A study published last year by Northwest University found that on average, 2.5 newspapers in the United States close their doors every week. On Wednesday, State Assemblymember Buffy Wicks of Oakland announced a deal with Google that she says supports California journalists and that labor organizations representing those journalists say is disastrous and could even accelerate their demise. Matt Pierce, president of the Media Guild of the West, said the deal had its roots in an effort to hold big tech accountable for the damage it has done to the local news model and to force them to fund newsrooms.
The really important part here that we're concerned about is that Google's contribution to this whole deal is actually very, very minimal.
According to an analysis by the Guild, Google would contribute about $55 million to a new journalism fund over the next 5 years. The state of California would contribute $70 million over the next 5 years.
This will be called the News Transformation Fund, which will be administered by the UC Berkeley School of Journalism. As we reported on Monday, this also includes a program to accelerate artificial intelligence.
Ashley Zavala of KCRA broke news of the deal before it was announced. The total amount, an average of just $25 million a year, is a far cry from the more than $900 million a year that would have been generated from a proposed data extraction tax, a tax on the big tech platforms for their use of personal data that would have been paid to journalist organizations and to schools if SB 1327 had passed instead of the negotiated deal. Senator Steve Glaser of Orinda proposed SB 1327, and he offered some observations on the Google deal on Wednesday.
Despite the good intentions of the parties involved, this proposal does not provide sufficient resources to bring independent news gathering in California out of its death spiral. Google's offer is completely inadequate. And I'll say something that I know you all know. Democracies live and die based on the free exchange of information and oversight between government and its people. Autocracies and dictatorships thrive when that information is constrained or manipulated. The hollowing out of independent news gathering and the monopoly power of these digital platforms is an existential threat to our democratic republic. This agreement, unfortunately, seriously undercuts our work towards a long-term solution to rescue independent journalism. There is a stark absence in this announcement of any support for journalism from Meta and Amazon. These platforms, along with Google, have captured the intimate data from Californians without paying for it. The use of that data in advertising is the harm to news outlets that this agreement should mitigate and which it does not.
Senator Mike McGuire, who represents Mendocino, provided KZYX with a written statement. He said, quote, "This proposal lacks sufficient funding for newspapers and local media and doesn't fully address the inequities facing the industry. The Senate was pursuing a global solution that would hold all these companies accountable and is committed to continuing to work with all sides on the ways to support journalists who deliver the news and keep our communities informed. Their work binds this country together, and it is essential to our democracy." Steve Waldman, the founder and president of Rebuild Local News, who supported SB 1327, says it's important not to lose sight of the progress the deal represents.
Along with similar steps taken recently in New York and Illinois, there's really now a movement underway to help save local news through public policy. Here's what we appreciate about the deal. It would create a subsidy for local newsrooms pegged to the number of editorial employees rather than the number of links or web traffic, as some of the earlier plans had envisioned. Both the government and technology companies have recognized that the local news crisis seriously harms communities and needs a strong collective response. This will hopefully create a strong precedent for other states and companies.
Still, Waldman says the fund is not nearly enough to address the massive scale of the problem facing local newsrooms in California, which have lost about 5,000 people over the last two decades. Assuming an average salary of $75,000 a year, we'd need $375 million to make up for those losses. Journalists were particularly concerned that a bill that had started out with the goal of helping newsrooms had turned into a deal to accelerate a technology that could replace their jobs. Matt Pierce said it's not just Google, it's also newspaper owners.
Are very interested in this plagiarism technology that eats our work for free. And they're interested in exploring that. They're interested in exploring that because it might mean that they may not have to pay journalists, which is something that no one wants to do, including Google.
For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In national news, in her first policy speech, Vice President Kamala Harris focused on the economy, calling for proposals to combat high prices for food, housing, and prescription drugs, while also proposing child tax credits and pledging to work with states to cancel medical debt. KPFA's Eileen Alfandari reports.
Vice President Kamala Harris said the country has made progress since she and President Biden took office. She pointed to the creation of 16 million new jobs, major investments in infrastructure and clean energy, and inflation now below 3%. But Harris acknowledged many people don't feel that progress in their daily lives.
Costs are still too high. And on a deeper level, for too many people, no matter how much they work, it feels so hard to just be able to get ahead.
Recent polls show that the economy and inflation still top the list of voter concerns, above the issues of immigration, crime, or reproductive rights.
A loaf of bread cost 50% more today than it did before the pandemic. Ground beef is up almost 50%. Many of the big food companies are seeing their highest profits in two decades. And while many grocery chains pass along these savings, others still aren't.
Harris said she would work to pass the first ever federal ban on price gouging by food giants, with penalties for companies that exploit economic crises. Harris proposed a sizable $6,000 child tax credit for families with children in the first year of life. She also called for restoration of the expanded child tax credit of up to $3,600 a year per child. Early this month, Senate Republicans blocked action on restoring the pandemic-era tax credit of that amount. A day after appearing with President Biden to tout the first-ever deal negotiated by Medicare and pharmaceutical companies to lower the prices of 10 key prescription drugs, Harris doubled down on the issue.
And I pledge to continue this progress. I'll lower the cost of insulin and prescription drugs for everyone with your support, not only our seniors.
Harris also said she would work with the states to cancel medical debt for millions of Americans. More than 100 million adults owe an estimated $220 billion in medical debt. Black and Latino adults suffer from medical debt disproportionately when compared to white Americans. On housing, Harris called for construction of 3 million new housing units and a $40 billion innovation fund to finance local solutions to build housing. Her proposal includes $25,000 in down payment support for first-time home buyers. Harris also said she would take on Wall Street investors who buy up homes in bulk and then rent them at whatever the market will bear.
Because, you know, some corporate landlords, some of them, buy dozens, if not hundreds, of houses and apartments. Then they turn them around and rent them out at extremely high prices. And it can make it impossible then for regular people to be able to buy or even rent a home.
In a statement emailed to KPFA, the president and CEO of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition said that, quote, the central focus of housing affordability in the Harris campaign is historic. The coalition said Harris's proposal to expand the child tax credit would also positively impact housing affordability, as many low-income people use the extra cash to help pay the rent. But the Housing Coalition noted that most of what's been proposed requires congressional action. It urged the Biden administration to take executive action now to tie renter protections to federally backed mortgages to prevent egregious rent hikes or evictions. Harris delivered her speech in North Carolina, where a new poll by the nonpartisan Cook Political Report showed her leading Donald Trump by 2 points. It's a major swing from the 8-point lead Trump had over Joe Biden in North Carolina in May. Meantime, independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who was the top choice of many progressive voters in the 2016 and 2020 Democratic presidential races, welcomed Harris's proposals. Sanders called them a bold, popular economic agenda. But Sanders made it clear he wants even more ambitious action. In a recorded statement on his website, Sanders called for expanding Social Security benefits by lifting the cap on taxable income and more robust Medicare benefits.
We could expand Medicare. Think of a dental hearing envisioned. We should have a tax system, which finally asked the billionaires to stop paying their fair share of taxes. These are not radical left ideas. This is what the overwhelming majority of the American people believe is good policy, including a majority of Republicans.
I'm Eileen Alfandary for KPFA News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Elise Cox, Daniel Mentz, and Eileen Alfandary. KMU News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.